Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You're listening to Perfectly Healthy and Tone Radio with your host, Darren Fatman McDuck. And now, prepare to get fat.
Hey, 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 welcome back to another episode of Perfectly Healthy and Tone Radio. I'm your host, Darren Fatman McDuffie, and tonight we have another action-packed episode for you. We'll be talking about healing diabetes with fruit with Tasha Lee, and I met Tasha personally. She's here in Florida where I am. She just lives a lot north of me. I'm actually in south, more towards Miami. But before I get her on, I'm waiting for her to call in through Skype. Hopefully she'll be able to do that. But before she comes on, just wanted to remind you of last week's show, or Monday's show, rather, with Dr. Maya Shetreat Klein. Had a very good time speaking with her about her book, The Dirt Cure. And we spoke specifically about children, about kids, and how to keep your kids healthy. A lot of the children today are not healthy. And we spoke specifically about food sensitivities, food allergies, cleared up things about milk, casein, and whey in milk. So really enlightening show with her. And I would encourage you, if you have kids or know someone who does, please share that episode with them, because that can really cut down on doctor's visits. So you want to get as much knowledge as you can. A lot of chronic ear infections, stomach aches, things of that nature are always tied to maybe something that a child is eating that may not be agreeing with them. And I can tell you, just from my experience of working in a food sensitivity lab, that a lot of the five most five most sensitive things that most children are sensitive to are eggs. I found that out firsthand. Milk, believe it or not. You have tomatoes. A lot of people are sensitive to tomatoes. Soy, of course, which I think Dr. Maya Shetreat Klein's son was actually sensitive to soy, and it brought him asthma-like symptoms. So you want to stay away from soy. And then there is one more, which I cannot remember right offhand. I believe that one is wheat. So wheat, a lot of people are having issues with wheat as well. So you want to make sure that you kind of eliminate those things from the diet. And if there's something that's still irritating your child, maybe you might want to consider getting a food sensitivity test to find out exactly what your child has allergies or sensitivities to. It's well worth the money. I've seen some miraculous things happen when just common foods that children are eating are taken out of the diet. Stomach aches go away. I talked about on the show where I had one specific customer. She was a doctor, actually a chiropractor, and her daughter was complaining about stomach aches, and it turned out to be eggs. Eggs was the culprit. And she took the eggs out, and she sent me a letter just saying that, hey, I'm really glad you convinced me to take the test. And it was invaluable to her that her daughter was not complaining of stomach aches all the time. So I cannot say enough about maybe just those five things, pulling them out of the diet. And if you have to go further, going in and getting a food sensitivity test. If you need help from me about recommending a test, I'd be glad to do that for you. You can email me at perfectlyhealthyandtoneradio@gmail.com. Again, perfectlyhealthyandtoneradio@gmail.com if you have any questions. And also, if you have any suggestions for people that you would like to hear on the show, you can send them into that address. Again, Gmail address is perfectlyhealthyandtoneradio@gmail.com. So waiting on Tasha to call in again. So I guess I'll keep talking. A lot of people are getting off of the Memorial Day holiday, so hopefully you had a great Memorial Day. A lot of things coming up. Summer is getting ready to kick in high gear. If you're going to be out on the beach, I would say grab some sun, get some vitamin D in, and enjoy yourself. I'm here in South Florida, and I've been going to the beach since about March. I've been enjoying myself and getting some vitamin D in, and the water has started to warm up. So again, you want to make sure that everything is going well. So I'm not sure what's going on with Tasha. I'm going to see what's going on. Don't really know here if she's trying to call in or not. So bear with me. I can't see in the switchboard. And while I'm doing that, I just wanted to remind you of being able to connect with me on social media. You can connect with me on Facebook or my personal page, Darren McDuffie. You can also go to the fan page, Perfectly Healthy and Tone Radio. That's facebook.com/Perfectly Healthy and Tone Radio. Also on Twitter at @TheFat_Man. And you can connect with me there and get the latest updates on the show. I usually tweet the show out, the show that we're doing. At the particular point in time, I usually tweet that out, and you connect from Twitter. Facebook, I'm always updating on my personal page. I'm frequently updating and putting Facebook events, so you'll know exactly when the show actually happened. So not sure what's going on with Tasha. I'm not sure if she's having an issue. Okay, there she is. I don't know if she had an issue with trying to get in on Skype. So before I get her on, just let me read Tasha Lee's bio. Tasha Lee was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 11 and with epilepsy at the age of 13. She did what was necessary to survive her teenage years. This included regimented control of eating and medication. She would be affected by her condition more than she could ever imagine. She began secretly binge eating and rebelling against those who tried to help control her and influence her life decisions. Her eating would spiral out of control and eventually lead to an eating disorder. Her downward spiral would continue for 15 years. Tasha Lee eventually got certified as a personal trainer, but couldn't work because the focus on weight and exercise fueled her obsession. She sought recovery, but was unable to find a solution. Through an amazing turn of events, she finally recovered in 2007 and began a new way of living, which changed everything. Tasha Lee, welcome to Perfectly Healthy and Tone Radio.
Thank you. Hi, Darren. Sorry about that.
How are you? Did you have to call in from your personal number? Skype wasn't working?
Yeah, it wasn't working.
Yeah, you know what? I usually sign on the show through Skype, and for some reason, all the lines were full. So I'm actually doing the interview by phone, but we'll be okay. We'll be okay. So
cool.
Let's go ahead and jump in and get started. So I just read your bio. You were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 11 and then with epilepsy at the age of 13. Go back in time, if you will, and kind of take me through, me and the audience, so to speak, about what was going through your mind at that time. Because for me, at 11 years old, I was worrying about stitches and maybe a broken finger. I suffered a broken finger when I was in middle school, and nothing more, nothing less. I can't imagine what you were going through at that time being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. But take us back to that point and kind of walk us through what you were going through, what you were feeling at that point in time.
Okay, well, you know, it kind of started the summer before. We were traveling as a family. I have a lot of brothers and sisters, and we had to keep stopping for me because I had to go to the bathroom and I was drinking so much, and I felt like a pain in the butt, but I didn't know what the problem was, you know. And then on the first day of sixth grade, I had to keep asking my teacher to go to the bathroom, and I was so embarrassed, and I'm like, I'm just going to hold it. And I wet my pants, and it was so embarrassing. And we ended up going to the doctor and then getting tested and found out that I had type 1 diabetes, which was just, you know, pretty shocking. But I have a twin sister, and she had been sick with allergies. She would keep me up at night with her allergies, and I was just like, oh my gosh, it's so annoying. But I felt bad for her, so I kind of felt like, well, she got allergies, I got type 1 diabetes, so, you know, it's only fair. I had to get something. I mean, once I had it, it was really, it made me pretty angry, all of the restrictions. Like, I had to get on this food plan, but my family was very supportive. You know, they switched, we all ate at certain times together, and they switched how we were eating. And, you know, I felt very supported, but at the same time, I was just like, man, I just want to eat what I want to eat. And the worst thing for me was I was getting ready to go on a trip to Jamaica. It was like this really cool mission trip. And at the last minute, my parents weren't going to let me go because I wasn't taking good care of my diabetes, and they were concerned that something would happen to me. And I just got very, very angry about that incident. And I think that it was kind of spurred me into a lot of angry eating. And I did end up going on the trip, but we had to, like, pack everything, like, be really, really careful about just everything because, I mean, you just have to with type 1 diabetes. So there was just a lot of anger that developed, and I started acting out later in high school.
Yeah, and then you were diagnosed with epilepsy at the age of 13. So if that wasn't enough, it's like you kind of underwent a double whammy by being diagnosed with epilepsy. How did that affect you? At 11, you have the diabetes, and then at 13, it's epilepsy. So are you at this point thinking, oh, my God, you know, is my health ever going to get better, or were you just, like, totally devastated?
I think I was just kind of like, what the heck? I don't know. I had the seizure walking in the woods one day, and then we just started seeing doctors. You know, I just went to my neurologist, and we get the EEGs, and, you know, I had to avoid flashing lights, and whenever we'd drive past the a bunch of trees where the sun was shining through, and it would kind of flicker on the side of my vision, I could feel like a seizure coming on. It was just, I mean, you kind of, whatever you have, it just becomes life and you just deal with it. And so I was just like, well, this is what I have to do. And I have to avoid video games and strobe lights and, you know, dances with flashing lights or whatever. And, you know, I don't know. I just kind of figured this is what my life is and I just have to do what I have to do. The epilepsy, I don't think affected me as much as the diabetes just because it was like I took my medicine and it kind of controlled it somewhat.
Yeah.
It wasn't as
bad
as some people's epilepsy.
Yeah, you mentioned you had a twin sister and you and I talked in person and we talked but we didn't kind of get to the meat of who you really are, and I wanted to get to that on this interview. But you mentioned that your sister had allergies. What was the overall health of your family? Has anybody ever had diabetes, or were there any major health issues between your mom and your dad?
No, I mean, I was pretty much the only one that had diabetes, and, you know, there was, like, high blood pressure in the family. Nothing really big, no.
So you were the only one other than your sister who had the allergies.
Yeah, I was the lucky
one. In your
book,
you mentioned... Yeah, and you're probably right in more ways than one. But you mentioned in the book that there's been an increase in diabetes, and it just seems like I know personally in my own family, I can think off the top of my head right now two people I know that are diabetics within my own family. Why do you think that we're having such a epidemic of diabetes at this point in time?
You know, I used to think that it was because everybody was just kind of eating crappier and sitting in front of the TV, and, you know, it was a result of just our poor lifestyle choices, because it is something that at least type 2, you know, can be reversed by changing what we eat. But lately I'm learning a lot as I've been doing, like, parasite cleansing for my other stuff that happened to me this year, and just seeing that there's a lot of connections with our environmental toxins and molds, funguses, like, and EMFs even, things that I never would have considered before. I think there's just a lot of attacks against our health, and, you know, our immune systems are getting attacked. And we're just, you know, it's like a response. So in addition to not eating that healthy, we're kind of being bombarded. So I think that there's a lot of reasons that it's on the rise. And it just feels like we have to do more as humans to stay healthy than ever before. Like, it seems like in the past, people didn't really, you know, they ate what they ate, and it wasn't like, oh my gosh, I have to eat healthy in order to not get diabetes. It seems like now, like, we have to really think about it and just really be mindful about doing everything as healthy as possible to avoid getting conditions, where it didn't seem like it was such a problem in the past.
Yeah, it does seem like it's a lot of labor going into really being healthy, but we're undergoing a lot more stuff. Our bodies are being introduced to things that they weren't being introduced to for 20, 30 years ago. You mentioned the parasite cleansing. You and I actually met through the turpentine. I filmed a YouTube video, and I'm like, who is this woman asking me questions about turpentine? Then you popped up on my Facebook page, and we started talking, and I went to your page and saw that you were, you know, healing diabetes with fruit, and that's how we actually met. But when you started this journey of just healing the diabetes with fruit, you chose to focus on three areas. One was your blood sugar, your energy, and then healing your damage through your eating disorder. Tell me why you decided to focus on those three key areas for you.
You know, I'm not really sure. It was after recovering from my eating disorder and just kind of asking God how to nourish my body in an unselfish way, and knowing that I had really not been taking care of it for many years, like 15 years, just shoving all kinds of crap down it, and I mean down my throat. And I think, you know, I just was tired. I wasn't feeling my best, and I was open to new methods, and I felt as I read about raw foods, I saw that it was an opportunity to heal. And so I kind of felt like that was, I felt that I owed my body a shot. And so that was kind of the big thing with raw foods. I saw that I could heal. So that was the one. And I wanted to feel good. And I think it was maybe during my experimentation with stuff that I felt different foods affected me differently, maybe gave me more energy or less energy. And so that became just one of my criteria was, well, it's got to give me energy, because if I'm feeling like crap, then there's really not a reason for me to continue eating that way. And what was the third one? I can't even remember.
healing your damage through your eating disorder.
Okay, yeah, so the healing, the energy, and then the blood sugar control. Yeah, because that's diabetic. That is something that, you know, I had to keep in mind. And I was having trouble on the diet. Before coming to raw foods, I had switched to a diet for food addicts. And it was, like, the healthiest I had ever eaten, probably. Got rid of processed foods, sugar, flour, wheat. It had, like, lean animal products and, like, high-protein grains. And it was, you know, the healthiest that I had ever seen. And when I started eating that, my cravings went away, as far as like the cabinets always calling to me. Like, that is what I felt for years, was the cabinets were just drawing me to open them and pull stuff from them. And when I stopped eating the sugar, flour, and wheat, that stopped. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. But on that diet, I had trouble with my blood sugar. So that's why I kept looking for things better.
Yeah, and you were a binge eater, is that right? Like, just eating?
Yeah, like whole pizzas and big things of ice cream, gallons of half gallons, big things of pasta, plenty of stuff.
How much of that was, because I've interviewed a lot of people, and one thing that I've come to the conclusion is that a lot of that behavior has more to deal with emotions, like it was emotional. How much of that binge eating was emotional for you?
Well, I think when it first started out in high school, it was very emotional. It was anger. I was so angry. And I was very, it was a lot of selfishness. Like, I just want to do what I want to do. And, you know, I went to college and it became even more, okay, you can't control me. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And so at that point, it was very emotional. But I think as I continued on in that, it became actually, I was like enslaved to it. And it was not even, it just became, it was what I did. I was addicted. And at that point, it was like my mind, like in the addiction community, we talk about like this physical allergy, like where once I start, I can't stop. But then also this mental obsession where even once I am, if I do say I'm never going to do it again, I cannot keep that resolution. There's this, oh, this crazy thinking that drives me to take that first bite, even no matter what. And so, yes, emotions would be like something that would drive me to do it, but it was even, it didn't even matter what I was feeling. Like I just didn't have any solution to life in general. It was just what I did. So,
Yeah, you couldn't control it. I've been there too. When I had, a lot of people don't know this, but I gained an enormous amount of weight after leaving college and being an athlete. And one of the things that I knew that I had to control was eating out of boredom. Like I would sit in front of the TV and just the whole bag. I don't eat M&Ms anymore, but the peanut M&Ms, those were my favorite. And if you go in the store now, they have what you call the mega bag. And I would sit in front of the TV and eat a whole bag of those things. And I would feel horrible the next day, but I would keep doing it, and I couldn't understand why I was doing it. And then one day I just sat down when I made my commitment. I said, hey, why am I eating this? And it turns out that I kind of correlated sitting in front of the TV with boredom, and that was my entertainment to shove the M&Ms in my mouth. So I know exactly where you're coming from because I dealt with it myself. We keep talking about type 1. We keep talking about type 2. Explain the difference between type 1 and type 2, and you're a type 1, so explain the difference between the two, the type 1 and the type 2.
Okay, well, it used to be that type 1 was called, like, juvenile diabetes, where you just kind of get it, and the type 2 was adult onset, where it's, like, more related to lifestyle and unhealthy eating, being overweight and stuff. But now kids are getting type 2 and adults are getting type 1, so... a lot of times the type 1 is referred to as autoimmune, where the body just reacts to something and starts attacking itself, attacks the cells in the pancreas to where you stop making insulin. And then you have to take, you're reliant on insulin, external insulin to stay alive. And the type 2s, it just is where their body becomes kind of clogged up with junk, you know, unhealthy eating, and the body becomes unable to really use the insulin that's already being made. So it is, their bodies are making insulin, but they just become very insensitive to it. That's kind of a basic understanding.
Yeah, and the type 2, you've seen just by through your book, and last night I was just going through and making sure I was dotting my I's and crossing my T's for the interview. And in the book, it seems to continuously keep mentioning that type 2 is reversible. Am I right and correct in saying that? Yeah, it's just a matter of kind of changing your lifestyle and maybe doing the things that you say in your book of being, getting on the fruit and talking about the fruit. One thing that intrigued me about the book was that I was going through the testimonials and looking at different people's testimonials, and it seemed like the people that were diabetic were responding, and I think you mentioned this earlier in the interview, they were responding better to raw food. Why is it that when you are diabetic, you respond better and quicker to raw foods?
So it kind of depends on, I mean, there's different approaches to raw food, so I think it kind of differs. There's generally a high fat raw food, low fruit with a lot of vegetables. In my book, I'm talking about low fat and high fruit. And when the people in my book where they got off animal products and they started eating a low fat vegan diet, so plant based diet, even if it wasn't raw, they started seeing results, but they got better results on raw. And even there's a lot of people that I talk to who have gone back and forth between just a vegan diet and a raw vegan diet. I think one of the and got better results on the raw vegan diet. And I think one of the reasons is that it's like real food, whereas it's easy to do kind of more junk vegan, like processed food still being a vegan.
Right.
On raw, it's real food. Body can use it. It's got nutrients. It's got fiber that goes with the fruit that helps the sugars be used. It's very cleansing. I think that's part of it, actually. So a lot of, parasite issues do go away just by getting on a raw food diet. I think that's part of the blood sugar issues getting resolved.
There's probably
a lot of factors.
Yeah, and one of the things I was going to ask you, and just to get your opinion on, because when I was just kind of playing around with this in my mind last night and getting prepared, I was like, okay, because I just had someone on the show, Dr. Ellen Cutler, came on, I think maybe 3 episodes ago, and she talked about enzymes. And it seems as though that the raw food has a lot of enzymes in it, whereas, your cooked food doesn't have a lot of enzymes in it. So it's a lot less stress on the body when you're eating the raw food. And I'm thinking that maybe there's something there with the raw food, especially for someone who has maybe like you an autoimmune or is suffering from diabetes, metabolic syndrome, is taking that stress off the body because there's so many more enzymes in the food. I don't know. I'm not a raw food specialist. I'm just trying to, my mind works like that, and I try to piece things together. So it kind of makes sense based upon the interview that I did with her.
Absolutely. The enzymes, and also cooked food, when you cook food, you damage the nutrients. So it becomes a lot of times unusable by the body, and we need healthy nutrition to heal. That's, a big part of healing is getting nutrients that the systems use. So I think definitely enzymes and nutrition not damaging the real food. Yeah,
it just made so much sense from the interview that I did with her, and then I'm sitting here late at night, and I'm thinking, okay, the enzymes, the raw food enzymes, there's more enzymes, less stress on the body. So it makes a ton of sense. You decided to put a lot of testimonials in your book. It follows, different people and their different lifestyles and what they were doing before they were diagnosed with diabetes. I think one woman was an alcoholic. One woman, I remember her from Jamaica, and she'd gained a lot of weight. I can't remember her name. I think it was Tony or something. I want to say that, but I don't really remember. But it's a lot of testimonials in the book. Were those testimonials for you more so to get your point across for people to say, hey, look at these people, they've done it? Or was that more for you, for your personal satisfaction, that, hey, you're constantly reminding yourself that I can do this. Other people have done it. I can do it. Was it more for others, or was it more personal for yourself, maybe?
That's a good question. I wrote the book because I was very excited about what was happening in my body. I was excited to see changes happening, and I had heard about type 2 healing. Like, I heard that it's so great for type 1s, but type 2s, if they do this diet, they can heal in, like, a month. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. I've never heard this. So I went to the diabetes message boards, and I was sharing with people. I was sharing other people's, videos that I came across, and they kept calling me a troll and saying, quit giving people false hope. And they were really, they attacked me a lot. And I was like, I would walk away from those just feeling really crazy and confused, and I'm like, am I giving people false hope? And it was just, I didn't know what to make of it, but they asked a lot of questions, they had a lot of objections, and I was like, they're not open to it, but there are people in this world who are going to be open to this information, and I want to share it. I want to answer all these questions. I want to find the people who healed, and I want them to answer these questions. I want them to respond to these objections and share their stories. So I just wanted this book to be out there with the stories of the people
right.
who healed, so that I could say, when people brought up things to me, I could be like, here, read my book.
right.
So, yeah, it was kind of for me because I wanted this resource to be in the world.
Yeah, it's bananas. I mean, your story, I've heard this over and over again from different doctors that I've interviewed, where they come forth and they start sharing this information. And it's as if people don't want to heal. It's like they want to I've sat down and talked with people and they say, my diabetes, my this, my that. It's like they identify so much with their diagnosis that it takes over. And then when someone comes in and challenges them to say that, hey, you know what, you can do this naturally, you can heal naturally, it's as if they're so attached to that diagnosis, they don't want to let it go, and they come up with what you encountered, the false hope thing. Oh, you shouldn't be giving people false hope. It's like, okay, what should you be giving them? If you're not giving them something to tell them that they can heal, then what else? Should I just be saying, hey, you got to be on your insulin for the rest of your life? Or, you know, it's funny to me. It just doesn't make any sense at all. Getting into Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just want to respond to that quickly. As a diabetic, there has been my whole life, there's so many people telling you, hey, do this, do this, do this, do this. And it's probably like this for many conditions, but I feel like because diabetes is like an industry, it's like there's always something new. And I think we kind of build up a shell. I mean, I don't know about the type 2s, but I know for me, I was just like, I don't want to hear it. I mean, people have said this to me my whole life, and I'm like, okay, it's not going to work. You know, and I think that's part of it too. Like, we don't want, well, it's one more thing. I'm done listening, you know. Might be part of it.
Yeah. But before, I was going to ask you a question, but I wanted to kind of go back on this as well, because this is something that I'm really strong about myself. And one of the things that I noticed in your book is that you took an active part in going out and seeking the information. I believe that you connected with someone who used to live here in Florida, and then you connected with someone who maybe two people, I think you were explaining to me, that eventually moved out to California, but you went on and you started to take an active part in your journey and saying, hey, it might be something to this raw food. Let me start researching it. How important is that, especially for someone who has diabetes, someone like you who may be associated with autoimmune? Because what happens with a lot of people is that they, again, identify with their diagnosis, and then for them it's all, hey, let me see what my doctor can do for me, instead of just saying, hey, what can I do for myself? You know, so how important was it for you to just start searching and looking for answers?
You know, I think my journey is a little bit atypical because it started after my eating disorder recovery, and I did not want to educate myself at all. I didn't want to look into the stuff that I felt like led to, like that was my responsibility. And so I started reading, and I read that people could heal diabetes on raw foods, and I'm like, no way. And yet I felt like I needed to look into it. And yes, I think that the research and the reading was so important, and I do consider education so valuable for anyone wanting to make a change or get healthier. Absolutely. Because I mean, there's really so many methods out there. And, like, for me, as I've continued my healing process, I just have found it really, really important to seek out people who have what I want and learn from them. And not just one person, because no one person has all the answers. But, you know, learning from a lot of people who are getting the results that I want, or just like, wow, that person looks really healthy, and just kind of learning what are they doing. You know, it's because some of it could just be surgery or whatever. We just never know. But just really, yeah, education is extremely important, I do believe, in making a change and being motivated. Because if I didn't know why cooked food is not healthy for me, then I have no motivation to stop eating cooked food. And it was like reading Don Bennett of health101.org. I read his book on avoiding degenerative disease, and I didn't want to read some of that stuff and learn it. But once I learned it, it was like I was responsible for this information. I was like, I've got to do something with this. Now that I know this, can't continue doing what I was doing before. So it was really huge in getting me to shift.
Yeah, one of my favorite sayings is Maya Angelou. She says, once you know better, do better. But a lot of people, you know, they never know better, so they're never doing better. But that's one of my favorite sayings, and that's something that I always implement in my life. I remember when you and I met, we actually met at Whole Foods, you with, you know, some other individuals there, and I'm sitting there talking, and I'm open. I'm like, hey, I don't know everything. There's stuff that I'm still learning, and I'm still reading books and doing other things, and I don't think that I know it all. And I'll be the first to say that I don't know. I've been doing this show since 2013, and every time somebody comes on, they challenge something I know. I just had a gentleman on talking about potatoes for losing weight. Who the heck knew that you could use potatoes to lose weight? Not me. Mm-hmm. But I'm always constantly learning stuff. Let's get into talking about fruit, because I've heard so many things about fruit, and one of the things that really piqued my curiosity and wanted you to be on the show was the first thing that I ever heard about fruit is that fruit is fattening, because fruit has sugar in it. It's going to raise your insulin levels, and that goes against everything that you're about. Why doesn't fruit raise your insulin level?
Well, everyone, when they eat fruit, they do have a blood sugar rise, and we do, you know, our body puts out insulin to take care of it, and then it goes back to where it needs to be. That's what happens in a normal person. It happens anytime we eat. So it's not a bad thing. It's a normal thing. It happens in the body. But I think there's definitely fear that fruit itself is bad. It's sugar. But it's what our body runs on, sugar. Our body uses these carbohydrates in the cells. I mean, it's a full package of nutrients. It's not as scary as we often hear. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. You did. And I mean, I've heard that fruit, because it's fruit and there's the fiber within the fruit, that kind of slows the absorption of the sugar. I don't know how right I am by saying that, but that's what I've heard. I'm just trying to make sure that, you know, we were piecing this all together, so to speak. What does your diet consist of? Are you eating the same fruit over and over? Do you do seasonal fruit? I know some people eat only mangoes at a certain time. What does your diet consist of when it comes to using the fruit?
Well, I have a wide variety of things that I eat. I probably eat more variety now than I did on any other diet, because once I started eating fruitarian, I'm like, well, really boring to just eat apples, bananas, and oranges. So I started learning about other fruits, and I got this big long list of fruits that I wanted to try at some point. And anytime I see something new, or we have it on our wholesale ordering list, then I'll try something new. But so basically, it's I'll probably eat, like today I had a pineapple for one meal, and I had I had a melon for another meal. I might have I had some dates in coconut water for one meal. So it's just, I kind of eat mono meals of fruit a lot, because I don't know, I feel like I can enjoy the taste better if it's just that fruit. And if I mix them all together, then you can't really get much variety, because it's always, you're getting everything in your mix. So if I just eat one, right, I can appreciate that. And then, so I generally do a lot of just plain fruit meals. During mango season, I'll eat like four mangoes for a meal. That's my favorite, Florida mangoes. And then I'll eat like some non-sweet fruits. Like sometimes I would eat meals of just like four bell peppers or some cucumbers, or I would make some kind of meal out of those. Like you can make zucchini spaghetti using a spiralizer and then put on like some tomato orange juice sauce with different seasonings to make a spaghetti sauce. So you can, I've done like street meals of that. Currently, since I'm doing parasite cleansing, I've been doing meals with raw sauerkraut and different kinds of sprouts and other supplements. Sometimes I do orange juice, dates, and like different green powders because the orange juice and the dates help to cover the green taste. Make it really good. That's kind of what I eat, like a few meals of fruit and then some kind of more savory type dish.
Yeah, and I guess my question now is are you satiated? Does it fill you up, or are you like, okay, I could eat something else? Does it actually fill you up to the point where you can carry yourself for 3 or 4 hours without thinking about food?
Yeah, it does. At first, a lot of times people don't eat large enough meals because when we come from a different diet, it's very dehydrated food. So if we eat like a McDonald's meal, it's a lot of calories in a small package. It doesn't take up much room in your stomach. But then when you eat fruit, it takes up a lot of room in the stomach. So you kind of think, oh, that's all I should eat. When in reality, it's not a lot of calories. So a lot of times people have to kind of practice eating bigger meals to where it lasts for a few hours. Now, me, I came from an eating disorder background, so I was used to binging and really stuffing myself and stretching my stomach, so it wasn't a problem for me. So I just eat, I tend to eat larger calorie meals. Like a lot of times if I'm not satiated, I'll do something with dates or bananas. Like we'll do banana ice cream. It's just frozen bananas, and then you can add, like, mint and raw cacao to make mint chocolate chip or whatever. So there are some that are higher-calorie meals that I'll do if I'm, like, really wanting more at the end of the day. But, yeah, I feel satiated. I feel really great and satisfied. There was a while where I would get cravings, and so at first when I got cravings, I had to learn to eat more fruit. And then the salt cravings, I had to learn to get more minerals through either more non-sweet fruits and salads, or I started incorporating the juiced barley grass powder. I think a lot of our minerals that should be in our food are not these days. So that's why I have to use more supplements than I may have had to in the past.
Yeah, are you checking any of your like biomarkers? Have you been to the doctor to check and see, you know, what is the thing that they do, like A1C, stuff like that? Are you keeping up with that, or you're just basing it on how you feel yourself?
Do you mean my diabetic numbers? Like you're talking about the A1C?
Yeah, just your okay. Yeah, and other health other health markers. I mentioned A1C, which is with that, but other health markers. Are you seeing a specialist or documenting any of this stuff, or are you just kind of going on how you feel? When I wake up in the morning, I have energy, I'm feeling good. How are you kind of making that mark?
Yeah, as a diabetic, you have to go every 3 months. Now I'm at every 6 months in order to get supplies. So when you're under the care of a diabetic doctor, we'll do the regular testing. So there's the A1C testing and then different panels, lipid panels and metabolic comprehensive panel. So I do get checked on that sort of stuff. And I always get my vitamin D and B12 checked as well. And I've been under iodine supervision for that and getting that checked. So I do, I think testing is important. Some testing hasn't really helped me, but there are things that I do want to make sure are in range. Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad that was a good segue into what I wanted to actually talk about next, because I had some specific things I wanted to ask you about when they pertain to diabetes. But you mentioned vitamin D. How important is it for you as a diabetic, a type 1 diabetic, and then you have your other type 2 diabetics? How important is it for you? And if you can give any recommendation to anybody else who out there might be listening, to have an adequate vitamin D supply.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know that vitamin D and diabetes are really related, but, I mean, I haven't really been able to tell a difference between me and other people as far as vitamin D. It just seems like everybody's low in vitamin D these days.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's pretty common. So, yeah, I think what I learned initially is that the recommendations we typically see for vitamin D are kind of low. It says 30, you know, it should be more than 30 ng per ml, but it actually should be, like, higher. So the things we see on lab tests are lower than where we need to be. And, you know, of course, the main way that vitamin D, we're supposed to be getting that is from sunlight, but, you know, we're kind of not getting as much sunlight as in the past and for various reasons, and so levels are dropping. I personally am using a vitamin D lamp. I've used D3 supplements, and I've been able to also raise my D levels by going to a tanning bed that had UVB bulbs in it, but that's actually kind of hard to find at tanning beds. But really, when the body makes the vitamin D itself, that's the best way. It's much better than supplements. So that's why I prefer the lamp to the supplements now that I'm not really getting in much sunlight where we are.
Two, maybe 3 years ago, I read a book called Lights Out, Sleep, Sugar Survival by T.S. Wiley. And one of the things that she explained on there was the fact that our society now, we're spending more time in light. Like, it used to be that you went to bed at 8 o'clock. When the sun went down, you went to bed. Now we're living that Vegas lifestyle where no one ever sleeps. We constantly have light from our computers. We're constantly watching, you know, television. And she said that in effect, makes your insulin levels rise or get out of control. How important is it for people who might be diabetic to get sleep? And I know you stay up pretty late. But you and I talked, but I wanted to just ask that question of you of how important is it for, you know, to get sleep, to get the proper amount of rest, especially when you're diabetic.
Yeah, I just know in general, not necessarily related to diabetes, but that's really interesting what you shared. But yeah, sleep is so important for healing. It's where when our nerve energy gets regenerated, it's where we're detoxing. And yes, I've got some terrible sleep habits in place at the moment. It seems like when you're working on a project, I don't know, I can only work at night. But yeah, it's really, really important for healing. And I definitely noticed that when I am in a bad sleep schedule, I don't feel as well. And I definitely, even just after getting one good night's sleep, I'm like, wow, I feel so much better. It's really huge in healing. And I did, for many years, I was going to bed with the sun, getting like loads and loads of sleep, really for years. It was really, really huge in my healing process.
Yeah, I'm with you. When I used to go to bed, I had made this pact. I'm not really following it right now. Sometimes I do.
Oh,
but
you're back too.
Well, it happens. You're working on stuff. You mentioned working on projects, and sometimes I'm working on stuff later at night, and you just get into it, and before you know it, it's 11 o'clock. But I do have these shades, the blue blocker shades that kind of block the light out. So, you know, that was one of the things they were mentioning in. I've heard so many times, I've had some guests on to get the blue blocker shades. But I wanted to ask another question about milk, because I've heard about milk, and especially with juvenile diabetes, that milk could be the culprit to bringing that on. But I don't know. I mean, you probably know more about that side of it than I do. So I wanted to see if there was any correlation between drinking milk, regular milk, not raw milk, the good stuff, but the regular milk that you go in the Publix. We have Publix here in South Florida for the audience. you grab that jug. But have you seen any correlation between milk, drinking milk, and maybe someone developing diabetes?
Yes. And I can tell you straight out, I'm terrible with scientific words and explanations. And if you want to know science stuff, I would really recommend reading Dr. Neil Barnard's program for reversing diabetes. He talks about all this stuff. He's got a whole chapter on the milk thing. But, yes, and I was a huge milk drinker too, which is interesting. But the proteins in it, I'm probably using the wrong words, but the body it's like identical to the something in the pancreas. So the body starts attacking, and it ends up attacking the wrong thing. And then that's one of the theories for type 1 diabetes, for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm the wrong person to ask about it.
Yeah, that's okay. But you said that Dr. Neil Barnard's book, so they can go and check that out. I guess I was blessed because at 25 years of age, because I was a huge milk drinker, I would always drink milk and I would always have to have a honey bun for some odd reason. But something happened, something changed with my enzymes, and I was no longer able to handle milk. And it probably was a blessing. So I'm glad I don't drink any milk anymore. But like I said, it probably was a blessing for me. Something else that I wanted to touch on from your book as well is that I saw a correlation that there was a prevalence where people who had diabetes also got other ailments. Like they had diabetes, there's one gentleman in there who developed cancer, there was someone who developed something else. Does diabetes break your immune system down so you're more susceptible to other ailments, and maybe because you're on the insulin, and most people are on maybe two or three other medications at a time for different ailments, is that one of the main reasons why they're developing these other ailments, because the diabetes actually is breaking down their immune system?
Well, I mean, that could be it. One thing that I was thinking is these are just symptoms. Like, we get different conditions, and it's just symptoms of a sick body, a toxic body, an immune system that's not working well. And it just kind of manifests differently in different people, depending on, I don't know, our genetics or our lifestyle or whatever. I mean, this year I've gotten sick with, like, pretty much everything you can get after, you know, toxic mold exposure and other stuff. But I have this website devoted to all of these different conditions, but it's like the same fix for all of them. You know, kill the toxins, detox the body, and build up the immune system. We've got toxic bodies, we've got crashed immune systems, and it results in different kinds of illnesses. We've got a lot of assaults coming at us. We've got to strengthen our immune system so that we can, you know, our bodies can fight it off better. So that's my theory.
Yeah. It's just, I think when you get one thing, it kind of breaks everything down or makes you more susceptible to a lot of things. And like you said, a lot is related to the toxins. And you and I are both big fans of coffee enemas. We talked about that. I do a coffee enema every Saturday. I used to do them more regularly, but now I feel like I kind of grasp control of, you know, where my body is and how I'm feeling. So I don't do them three or four times a week like I used to do them. I only do one a week on a Saturday. It's pretty relaxing. It flows pretty well. But it's amazing how many people out there don't know much about these things that don't cost that much that they can do to help their body, help their bodies along. I got to talk to you a little bit more off the air about that when we finish at some point, because I'm looking for another solution with my I've been using kind of cheap enema bucket, and I want to upgrade and see if you have any suggestions for me on that. We'll have to talk a little bit about that. But that's all I had. This is a great interview. I just wanted to know more because this really intrigued me. When you and I first started throwing salutations across Facebook Messenger. I'm like, wow, who is she? And then I went and I saw you, you know, you wrote this book, Healing Diabetes with Fruit, because she, let's face it, you know, Facebook, you're passing messages back and forth. Sometimes you don't know who you're talking to, but you gave me your website, and I went and I said, oh, wow, she might be great to have on the show, and I'm glad we met. And I told you there was a reason why we met, so I'm glad that we did, because I'm always looking to expand my knowledge, and this was something, again, I had always had this thing in my head that fruit wasn't good because I've heard so much that fruit is fattening, stay away from fruit, don't do this, don't do that. And now, you know, it's one more of my beliefs that were challenged, which is good. So I want to thank you for that, for actually coming on the show and giving people some hope if they take the show and they get some hope. And your book is an e-book and it's offered for free. Is that, am I right in saying that?
Well, I do have one that is available by donation. That is Don't Fear the Fruit. That one's by donation. Mm-hmm. The Healing Diabetes with Fruit costs money. But,
oh, okay. I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Both,
I thought that
but, yeah, they're both on my website. And
okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of
yeah.
There's tips and recipes in the Don't Fear the Fruit one and testimonials in that one, too.
Yeah, and it's TashaLee.org. That's the one I know that's Healing Diabetes with Fruit. I didn't see the other one, but it's what, TashaLee.org is?
Yeah, TashaLee.org has both of them on there. And, Darren, can I say something else about the fruit?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Go for it.
One thing that I think we didn't touch on, but a lot of people who want to, who start eating fruit and then say, oh my gosh, I got a blood sugar spike every time I eat fruit. It doesn't work for me. And we didn't talk about this, but as I mentioned, the type 2 diabetes, a lot of times the body gets clogged up with stuff, like the insulin receptor sites get clogged up and things don't work right to where the fruit sugar doesn't go into the cells and get used. Instead, it's just hanging out in the bloodstream causing problems. And this happens when we're eating a diet that is high in fat. And a lot of times people don't know that even lean animal products are still going to cause the same effect. They're still high in fat. So anybody who's eating any kind of animal products is going to have problems eating fruit because when those sites are clogged up, the sugars can't get into the cells to get used. So there is that problem. Anytime there's mixing the sugar and the fat, that does cause problems. So those who switch to, like, Dr. Neil Barnard's program, which is just a low-fat plant-based diet, they get rid of their diabetes. It just takes longer than the raw food version, but it's letting the body clear out that fat and become sensitive to the insulin that it's already making. And so those who do allow the body to clear out the fat then can eat the fruit without a problem. But sometimes it does take some time to transition, you know, especially if we've got a lot of stuff clogging our body. And so sometimes people will do like juice, you know, green juice fast or whatever, maybe some kind of just plain fasting or just eating a lower carb plant-based diet that's low in fat, just to allow some transition time so that they don't jump right into the fruit and have problems. So just
yeah,
know
do you
that
recommend,
there are transitions.
Yeah, do you you mentioned the green juice fast. Do you recommend maybe a detox before you even start a program like that, like this?
It seems to be helpful for a lot of people, yeah. I mean, I just jumped right in, but then again, I was back and forth a lot, and
yeah.
So I did have blood sugar issues. So, you know, whatever works for people, you know. We all have our own methods. Some people are quick to change, some people are slow to change, and whatever works.
Yeah. Do you do any coaching on this type of stuff? Do you have anybody that you coach on this, like, or if people are interested in some type of coaching?
Yeah, I do coaching by donation. It's not really a focus of mine. My friends, Robbie Barbero of Mindful Diabetic and Cyrus Kambada of Mango Man Nutrition and Fitness, they're kind of the people I send people, you know, they're the big diabetes and fruit coaches. They're really great.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, Tasha Lee, thank you so much for being on. And the website is tashalee.org. And again, if you guys want to email me if you have trouble hearing this, because tonight I actually wanted to apologize because Skype, I normally call in the show from Skype, and I couldn't even call in. The lines were all full. So I don't know what was going on with Blog Talk, so I want to apologize for the audio quality. I'm going to actually probably take this show and clean it up and then upload it again just so to see if we can make it sound a little bit better. But, again, it may sound good. But, Tasha Lee, again, thank you for being on, and I'm sure you and I will be talking soon.
Darren, can I say one last thing?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, the website for the diabetes stuff is fruitariandiabetic.com. That has all the resources. It's got, like, what I eat in a day with blood sugars. It's got some of Robbie's, some of Cyrus's. It's got interviews. It's got links to resources. So that one is the one that's really specific to diabetes, and I would encourage
okay.
you to check that out. It's got a link to our Diabetes and Fruit Facebook group, too.
Yeah, when we get off, can you just message that to me through Facebook Messenger, and then I'll put that on the show notes so they have that, because right
yep.
now I have visit tashalee.org, so I want to put that one on there as well so they'll have that one.
Okay, yep.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a good night.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, good night. Thank you. All right, guys, again, I want to apologize for the audio quality of the show. Like I said, there were some problems with me calling in the Skype. If you don't know, I normally call into the show from Skype, and then I'm speaking through a podcast microphone, which sounds so much better. But tonight I had to go through the phone. So I don't know what my audio quality sounds like, and she had to call in from her cell phone. So apparently there might have been something going on with Skype tonight. So something you can't control. A live show. I wanted to get the information out there. And like I said, what I'll do is once the show uploads itself, I'll download it. I have an audio software that I normally I can go in and clean up the show and maybe take out some of the what's in there, maybe the noises or background noise or whatever, and then I'll re-upload the show so it'll sound a little bit better. But hopefully you learned some information, and we'll be back next week on Monday. I believe Monday is should be the 13th, and that will be Dr. Tom Cowan, and we'll be talking about cardio, conversations about cardio health. So that will be dealing with blood pressure, heart ailments, things of that nature. So hopefully you'll join me then. Same fat time, same fat channel. Peace and love, y'all. Good night.